What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Panels on Pages. My name is Dali Borjevich, and I am joined today by Anthony Stokes of Decay fame, Intrusive Thoughts fame, Tap or Die fame.
Keep it going, keep it going.
If you guys are on Twitter, if you guys know Indie Comics, you guys know Anthony Stokes. How you doing, man?
What's up, bro? You left a couple off. I'm chilling.
You know what? I can't remember them all. You got so many.
I'm saying, yeah, it's not easy.
You got a catalog now. You got a catalog now, man. I remember. I mean, like you've been at this for what, 3 years now? Four?
I probably started my first comic book in early 2021. So this will be my third year. Yeah.
2021, man. Like that is. I'll be honest with you, man. There are people who have been at it way longer who have way fewer books. So
way fewer series.
You're definitely putting out quality work at a steady pace, and that's rare in the indie space.
Yeah, it is, and it's not a competition, obviously. And it has its pitfalls. Like I like the route I've gone in trying to have so many series and trying to build up that back catalog, but I'm gonna reassess the release schedule and stuff. You know, I'm always trying to like figure out what's the optimal way to do something. You know, so we could speed up more, we could slow down next year. We have no idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, it all depends on. And the market's very volatile right now, especially with everything costs a lot of money. It's wild too. I like, you know what? I decided as a birthday treat to myself this week. I jumped on a few campaigns, and it's like the entry tier for various campaigns goes anywhere from like $3 to $15 for a digital copy. And it's just, the market is wild right now.
15 for a digital is crazy. That needs to be like a trade, or that needs to be like a graphic novel. 15 for a 15 for a floppy would be insane.
Yeah, the pricing is very interesting. I've had some very spirited discussions about indie pricing. That has it's a very, very spirited. A friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, he's had a lot of different jobs in the creative space. And when I said that it was wild to have someone drop 22 page comics for $10, he gave me some talking to, man. He gave me quite a bit of talking to, you know? And I see the points that he made, and I see there's a lot of people that put out $10 singles. You know,
is
I
that
think
digital or physical?
Physical.
Yeah.
I get it. And there are differences. And I think there are a lot of indie creators come at it from overproducing a higher quality product. And it's like this kind of paper and this kind of that. And just recently on a campaign, I was looking at something and I was really excited because like I bought the art book for them a while ago. And I was like, oh, let me see what the campaign's about, the trade. All right, cool. And I was like, you know, I got the hardcover art book. Let me look at the hardcover. It was $100+ or over $100 for just a regular hardcover. And I was like, and it was like 150 pages, which like $100. That's so many dollars. So then I was like, all right, well, let me look at the, you know, paperback version. It was $56. And I was like, steep. That's steep for like what is essentially a regular trade paperback. Like 150 pages is like a four or five issue mini and a trade. And I was like, I'm not saying it should be $25 like a Marvel book, but like if it was 30, I wouldn't have even thought about it. They would have been like, click. Like it would have just been so fast.
But I mean, that begs the question. I'm 30 for a, you talking about for a hardcover?
No, for the paperback.
For the paperback, I mean, 30 for a paperback is reasonable. I think like
hardcover. Like 30 to, 30 to 40, like 40 even, I'd be like, oh, it's a little high, but like, I get it, I'm into it.
50.
But like if the hardcover was like 60 even, I would have been like, all right, I get it. Like the art's really solid, I'm really into it, so I jump on it. But at 100, I gotta stare at it at $100. Like
I think thing about Kickstarter is, because I've seen a lot of people that will underprice their books, overprice their books. It's a novelty experience. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just the reality. We have to charge more. We don't have the infrastructure or whatever. I think 10 for a floppy for a 24 page comic book, I don't think that's you know what pisses me off is that people will spend money. It's myself, I'm the biggest culprit of this. You will spend money on the dumbest shit. Like whatever. and then it's like, ooh, you know, some, it's like interesting when people pick and choose. But, you know, $10, you know, we're talking about basically $15-16 for a comic book. Is it pricey? A little bit, I guess, especially relative, but on the whole, I mean, that's like, we're in the Grubhub era, you know, like that's a order from Domino's, you know, like that you can get the, you know, saying, so it's like, I find it frustrating to kind of like, the people don't have money. It's like, no, they have money. Especially in a, like, this is a country of consumerism. You know what I'm saying? Like,
for sure. That, I mean, look, if it was really about people not having money, 90% of comic book shops would have gone out of business during COVID. 90%. Because everybody lost money that early time. Because a bunch of people got fired when stuff closed down. There was, you know, a lot of people didn't have remote options. Restaurants closed down. Whole households got fired. You know, everybody was out of a job. If it was true, if the times are tough argument was valid with comics, almost all comic shops would have gone out of business. But right now, what I think it goes back to is the same reason cigarettes are still on sale, right? No matter how high the price goes, cigarettes still sell. And like, it's vices, no matter how you look at it, vices will always get sales. And for some people, it's alcohol. For some people, it's cigarettes. For some people, it's drugs. Other people, it's comic books. I made it my personal mission to keep my local comic shop open for business. I walked in there and I was like, give me a couple first volumes of whatever, some shit I've never seen before. Like, shit I've never picked up, shit I've never talked to you about. Indie shit, whatever. Like, so he gave me the first volume of Lock and Key, and I was like, all right, bet. And I came back about the rest of them, because I liked the first volume. Some problematic shit, you know?
This is problematic shit. I haven't read Lock and Key in a while. Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah. Right. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm going back to it. I think the thing is, though, I think you have to make a product that people will need. I mean, like you said, advice, you need to make a product that people will like go out of their way to get. I think that's the problem, is the things are becoming more expensive. It's like, okay, well, you either need to adapt to the market or you need to make cost control products. You got to make something that people need, feel like they need, like they, and I don't think people are doing that. I don't think I've achieved that to be clear. That's something that I'm striving to do. But I think a lot of the discourse is just like, you know, we can't acknowledge that there's less money, and we can't acknowledge that the Kickstarter market is kind of like tightening up, and that we keep making the same comics. Like, we can't, that's not feasible.
Right. And that's the thing. That's why I was saying, you know, I posted a tweet the other day, you know, if you're going to be dropping these, you know, $100, you know, printed on XYZ paper, like high quality, you know, collector's editions, you drop me like a, you know, like a $20 cheapest paper print option, you know, available reader copy, like, because I'll buy it. Like, because that's the thing with that, you know, the Kickstarter I was talking about, I would have gone hardcover if it was 60. I would have gone paperback if it was 30-40. Neither was that. And when I looked at the digitals, I already have that in digital, so like, I don't need the digital trade when I already have the singles. So they got $0 out of me when they could have gotten 20 to 40 bucks, maybe 60 if it was a hardcover for the 60. So it's like, I'm not saying I'm the fucking only guy
out
there.
Somebody bought that hardcover. Somebody probably bought that hardcover and made it worth it. Whereas like, they would have had to sell two or three, maybe at the rate you're describing, to get the profit that he did for that one potentially. And also, when you think about hardcovers, you got to think about storage. You got to think of like how heavy that shit is. I don't even know the book. Also, like, is it a prestige series? We don't know, but
yeah.
I mean, like, it's a game you gotta figure out.
There's a lot of factors for sure. Well, I wanna try to keep things a little focused. I'm trying to do my best I'm the indie hype man. I'm here to promote the indie. You know, I don't want to just sit here and complain about the indie, which we always can. There's a lot to complain about in the space.
I want some hot take, Brody.
But I wanna give you an opportunity to pitch your book right now. Intrusive Thoughts number 2 is on Kickstarter. If I haven't read the first issue, if I haven't heard of the series, tell me, give me the quick pitch. What's the story about?
Absolutely. So it's about a kid named Tyler who's orphaned at 3 years old. He has foster parents that are never at their house. They use him as a paycheck. He has sleep paralysis, anxiety, depression, and his mental health deteriorates when his sleep paralysis demon breaks out of his head and bites on his classmates. So it's a mystery, a hard mystery, if you will.
Nice, nice, nice. I haven't read the first issue yet. I have it, but I haven't read it yet.
What?
I haven't read it yet. Dude, look at the catalog. Look at the catalog.
At least you bought it, bro.
I roll dice and I flip coins to read, man. I got to a point where I was staring at the shelf and I was like, this looks cool and this looks cool. And I couldn't choose. I'd sit there for 20 minutes not pick anything. So now I take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I flip a coin into your mainstream. I roll dice for shelves and quantities and let the dice speak. You know, some weeks it's like two or three indie books. For like 2 weeks straight, it was X-Men. I don't know why, you know, dice do what they do. I always like to go back to that. Since I started this, the line from Nelly always hit me from the first song off the second album. Said, the dice gonna do what the dice gonna do.
Right, okay, fair enough.
But yeah, I've read a lot of stuff that I've bought like on impulse or other people's recommendations that I don't know when I would have gotten around to it, because it's like stuff that looks great and I bought it because it looks great and the concept's great, but I never, like, I read a book about killer clowns. It's such a weird book, but I don't know when I would have gotten around to that, like as a choice by myself.
But right.
That's what it landed on. I read it. I was like, that was like weirdly interesting. Like it wasn't like, I'm not really a big horror person either. So like, it's definitely a horror book. And it was like a interesting take on like the killer clown thing. And I was like, all right, cool.
Hell yeah.
So I land on all sorts of interesting stuff that way. So this is your seventh Kickstarter?
Eighth.
It is eighth. Okay. That's right. My gut was correct.
Yeah.
You had success across the board with all of your Kickstarters, right?
Absolutely.
That's what's up. You know what? You are out here often. You promote in different ways. Like I see you post on Twitter in different forms. It's not always just like, hey, here's my book, check it out. It's not always. You do those the question ones, the like engagement kind of like, I don't want to call it baity, but like that's what it is. Like you're looking for engagement, but it's like, would you buy this cover or does this look interesting? Like just like asking a question of the audience. And I won't lie, like it makes me pause, right? I personally don't buy based on cover, so for me, like that's kind of whatever. Like so, I don't usually comment on those. But if it's anything else, if it looks interesting, if it looks, you know, do you think this art is dope? Like, you know, I comment on stuff like that. So that definitely gets engagement.
The thing is, bro, honestly, I came to Indie Comic Twitter in 2022. And like when I first got there, I was getting engagement and I feel like I've transformed the language of how people like ask for campaign, because I wouldn't ask like, I would be, if I had 63 backers, I'd be like, who's gonna get to 65? You know, does anybody have a dollar? When Twitter was peaking, when Twitter was like, when the market was good, everybody was doing the whole like camaraderie like thing. I was getting so many pledges off Twitter. And it's just like, me and Chris Moe, my boys, like we just transformed the language around like how people are promoting their stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like other people are doing that too. Like, oh, would you buy this comic? Can we get to this specific goal? Stuff like that. So I haven't got my flowers yet, you know, but one of these days, we'll see.
Chris did Control Z, right?
Control Z, yeah, that's my guy.
Okay, so that's where I think that was the first post ever that I saw like a, would you buy this artwork kind of question. Because I'm not even on Twitter that often. Like once in a while, I get caught up in an argument, so I stay on there for a day. But other than that, like, I come on, I'm like, and then I got something else to do because I'm usually on at work. So it's like, I'm not even on that often. So when I see stuff, I see like slight patterns here and there. You know, I get on and it's like a lot of Twitter shit has already happened. I'm coming in the back end of a conversation and I'm like, why is everybody angry already?
You know, people are angry because it's a shrinking market. It's tough, man. It's really freaking hard. And I think like, what's unfortunate and something I'm going through right now, right, is that you like let's say I wrote Decay in 2020 and then the story didn't get finished until 2023. I wrote Choose Your Thoughts in 2022 and it's not going to be finished. Like that final is not going to be finished probably until 2025. is like you're seeing almost the after image of what we are creating as creators, right? You're seeing this, and the message and the verbiage around Kickstarter was you can make whatever comic you want and you'll find an audience. And that's, I think it's still true. It's not true for everybody, right? There has to be a floor. You know, there has to be a floor of quality that unfortunately some people can't meet.
A floor of quality, for sure.
For now, what's unfortunate is you're seeing it shrink. You're seeing the campaigns that are doing really well consistently are a lot, unless you are, I feel like I got in at a good time, like me, Chris, a lot of us got in a good time where we got a decent fan base before things started tightening up. But now you're seeing like the Kickstarters that are really doing good, that are blowing up, are like, you can break it down to like what Cheesecake Queer, you know, like Sex, NSFW, and it's really like these kind of pockets of content that are really going crazy. And unfortunately, it's hard if you're making something like, I don't think Kickstarter is a place for your passion project. You know what I'm saying? Which is unfortunate.
Really?
I think you could. And I also, when I say passion project, I mean like I'm making something that I really want to make, and then like I'm thinking of the audience second. I don't think, unless it lines up, and it can absolutely line up, and that's something, sure, I've been at odds with people all the time, is that people consider, if I'm like, yeah, go broader, people are like, oh, but I don't want to give up my vision, I want to make trash. But like, I would argue Tap or Die was going broader, and I would argue that's my best book.
So you think Tap or Die was going broader?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's wrestling.
I guess I've still seen, even though wrestling obviously has a very large fan base, yeah, I very much thought that, like, when you went there, I was like, okay, he's targeting that niche. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I don't see a lot of people who are, there is definitely crossover between people who are comic book fans, like superhero comic book fans, and wrestling fans. But I don't see a lot of people who are wrestling fans first, like hardcore wrestling fans, really crossover. Because I know people that have, like, that are mad about wrestling and are just kind of like, you know, they might watch MCU. They're not like into the comics. Like, I've seen a lot of that, but I've seen a lot of people who are hardcore comics and they're like, oh yeah, I also love wrestling.
I think, well, the main reason why I would say I went broad is that introducing like the sexy element and introducing the SFW element, that's what I would argue went broad, as well as having a wrestling thing kind of raises the floor of your product, as opposed to like a care and choose of thoughts that are, I feel like, I would still define it as going broad, but I maintain that that's my best book, you know, or one of my best books. But people think like,
best,
oh, I try to make something
best friendly. Book that you make.
Yes, to both. I would say that's my one of my best books, and like obviously my highest selling book. And I think people, when they hear like you need to keep your audience in mind, it's like, oh man, you know what you have to do is find the intersection between, you know, gratification as an artist and finding an audience, essentially.
Right.
And if you're not going to do that, be prepared. Lower your expectations. I also think what people take for granted is that a year and a half ago, you could count on steady growth from Kickstarter. You could count on, all right, if I do this project, I can, I'm assuming that my income is going to be bigger, like the product's going to become bigger, but that's also not the case. I found that I see a lot of people where it's like, okay, I want more money, I'm going to raise the goal because, hey, it's going to grow, it's going to expand, and it doesn't necessarily happen. I think one of the drawbacks of having so much on the platform is that there's more competition. You know, I know people don't like that word competition, but I mean, grow up, it's factually a competition. Like, there's no other there's no other accurate way to describe it. Like, you're talking about,
you got like, mainstream creators, you got them begging out here for sales. I think everyone understands that there is a competition.
Yeah, if you go to Zoop, there's like 20 campaigns at a time, even less. But you go to Kickstarter, there's like 1,000 combo campaigns.
Yeah.
And I think the thing to do is to make, which I'm not seeing, but also it goes back to my earlier point about all these projects are years later after you conceive them.
Right.
I don't see people trying to take a significant step in quality enough. I don't see people that are really self-diagnosing and trying to make significant steps in making a better product. You talk about Chris Moses. Like, I think you can look at his books and say, okay, these are getting consistently better. You know, like, the covers are getting better. I would argue that for myself as well. Like, my first book and then like this book, I think this book looks way better. But I think a lot of people are stagnant. I think being stagnant would have worked in 2021 and 2022, but I don't think it's working anymore. I think you got to get better.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the world has opened back up. People got shit to do. People want to be outside. People aren't sitting there looking for entertainment on their computer or inside of their homes anymore. They're out doing concerts. I mean, I watched how many people just got COVID going to New York Comic Con because they were like, I need to go to Comic Con, right? So
you know,
many
it's
people.
Crazy. Even cons, I feel like, are slowing down. Even conventions, like
I really do. I think so as well, man.
The first cons out of COVID were lit. Oh my God, it was packed, and now it's like in a I'm in Northern Virginia. There's if you were to be like in like the middle of Virginia, like I guess northwise, there's four or five cons you could drive to reasonably in a calendar year. Like right. if you're in, you know, if you're in New York, you have all kinds of cons. If you're in California, you got all kinds of cons you can go to. So even that, I feel like, yeah, it's tough. I think we don't realize how good we had it, you know, like seriously, like I wish I had a catalog I had then or now then, you know, I would have cleaned up.
Man, the con scene definitely has changed. I went to Fan Expo Chicago last year, which was like the first year that Fan Expo bought Wizard World Chicago, and it was a decent show, not very well organized for Artist Alley, but they had like some big names. You know, they drew some people because they had some pretty solid big names. This year, the number one complaint I heard from all the indie creators in Artist Alley was that there was a lot of people walking. There's not a lot of people buying. And I know Henri Compan, he does Yisun Shin and Warline is his new book. He's a dude who, I don't want to say he sells out every show, but he sells out pretty good majority of his shows, like a solid majority of his shows. And I saw that man third day with I don't want to say a full table, but like way more books than I've ever seen him at an end of a show. Like, and he brought less books to the 4-day show Fan Expo than he would a 2-day weekend show and still sold less.
I feel like the 4 days are pointless. I think a 2-day con is perfect. I feel like 3 days is pushing it, but 4, I can't
even. They were saying that they might push it to 3 next year.
What's the point? Like, who? I mean, maybe you get off of work for Friday. Like, maybe. But you're going to get off for Thursday and Friday. Come on.
I did, but that's because I wanted to go. That was my I really wanted to do the full weekend, and I really wanted to see the change from last year, because I knew last year was like their first year, and I was like, all right, there's gonna be some stumbling on that first go round. Let me see how they updated it. And I will say they did Artist Alley way better than they did last year, but I think they're really, really focused on celebrities and, you know, getting people autographs and shit. And they're just not really trying to get they're not trying to boost the indie, the creator space in general. Like, they're just not trying to do it.
And the reality, and I hate to sound so dour, but the reality is that's not where the money is. The money's in the autographs and stuff.
Of course. When you have Christopher Lloyd, and maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe, I don't want to jinx anything, but you know, one of his last shows. Let's be realistic. The man's really old. Like. That people are gonna go, and people did. People left their table to go. You know, my buddy
you gotta,
Joe.
Like, make something that people can't walk past, essentially. Exactly. You know, like that's gotta be the goal. You know, the cure to all this anxiety. Cause I get it too, bro. You just gotta try to. You really, really, really have to try to make better products. Make something that people can't say no to.
That's what I'm saying. I think there has to be a quality upgrade. I think that in the indie space. I a lot of times I look at something and as a buyer, and I'm like, man, that sounds cool. I'm like, but the art is just, you know, this. Or it's like, how much you're charging for what this is, I don't know. So like, I walk away a lot of times because of what it is, you know? And I'm seeing more, like you said, cheesecake sells, sex sells. And I'm seeing a lot more of that. And honestly, to me as a buyer, that's turning me away, because that's not really why I'm buying. I'm buying to read comics. But I do know that there is a massive market for that. So I don't disparage anyone for doing that shit. Like, you know, that's where the money is. You got to get the money. Like, if you're going to do this, like you were saying, you got to find a way to make money with what you're doing. Like,
yeah, you can absolutely make something that you came up with, but you cannot. What I am tired of, what I am sick of, is people like not trying to account for an audience, and then you don't make the money you want, and then you're crying about it. I don't want to hear that shit. I don't want to see it on the timeline. I remember way back when, this is like last year, I made a post about like marketing as comic making skill, and like the collective indie comic Twitter just ripped me a new asshole. But like now it's like, oh yeah, like a year, and then Heather Anto says the same thing, and it's like, oh yeah, oh my god, and Charlie Stickney says the same thing. It's like, oh yeah, so good, smart. Like, but you know, you're seeing the a lot of these creators too. When you got in, like if you're a Pat Shane or Charlie Stickney, right, you get in early, you get that you don't have that competition, you get that massive fan base, you keep expanding, you keep making better products, and you keep like redefining your audience and what they want. And then some people just kind of stick around, but they're not increasing, they're stagnant, and then it's just a steady decline, bro. It's tough.
Well, that's the thing, that I think a lot of people look at it as in, I'm walking into like a wide open receiving market, and they don't consider the fact that you need to figure out who you're selling to. You can't like, I know, you know, I'm about to publish my first novella. I know it's not for everybody. I just know there's certain elements of it that are not going to be for everyone. The fact that it's not like the high intensity action that like this world that it's a part of is. You know, that's going to throw off some people for sure. Like, it's more of a spy thing. I know that all of that is shrinking and narrowing down the audience. But like, if I can sell to that audience, that's all I need to do. I don't need to sell to everybody. Like,
yeah, exactly. No, exactly. It's about being realistic, man. I think like a lot of people have a mentality, I think, is like the way that people conduct, it's almost as if it's like there's no recession, like there's no conversation about recession, like there's no competition on Kickstarter, like the art, the paper isn't getting more expensive, the artists aren't getting more, I mean, which is fine, the artists can get more expensive, but yeah, like I said, I think like my whole thing is sustainability. I want to be able to keep doing this for a very long time, so that's just something that I personally put a huge emphasis on, you know. And I think, yeah, I mean, there's room for it to get a lot worse. There's room for it to like, there's a lot of room for it to just get more and more tight, where it's like, man, I think like the cheesecake stuff helps, because motherfuckers just be horny, you know, like that's, you can always depend on people to be horny, bro.
That's why I thought when Tyler did his little like secret, you know, experiment thing a while back.
Oh shit.
He was like, oh, you know, I funded in whatever. And first of all, the goal was super low. Second of all, it was literally like, this is a book about sexy shit. Like, it was called like sexy catalog. Something. Yeah.
He had
like,
a catalog on there as well.
Yeah, it was like, here is all the things that everyone, like horny dudes are buying this, and horny dudes spend money. Like if horny dudes weren't the backbone of American society, there wouldn't be 50,000 porn websites.
I also think the takeaway, because I do think like Tyler is, I disagree with a lot of that little experiment, because like I said, he had his catalog, you know, like I think the campaign did well. But of course, when you say sexy wit, I think the takeaway from me is that Tyler made a book that was tailored to the Kickstarter's audience. Like, that's what he did, you know, and
it hit all the numbers. It hit all the metrics that do well, because I backed, who did I back? I think it was Jamie May. I think I backed one of his campaigns, and the algorithm is for like 3 months. All it did was recommend me sexy shit. And I was like, I got it for the mechs. Like, God damn it. Like, yeah. I got it for the mechs. I don't even care about that. But it was like, hey, more titties? Want some more titties?
And I think there's other stuff. Like, there's other stuff that does well. But I think that's the thing. And I think when you understand, and then, like, the thing is that Sexy Witch Academia could only exist on Kickstarter. Like, the way that it is structured. Yeah,
you could put that in a comic shop.
You said what?
You couldn't put that book in a comic shop.
You couldn't put it in a comic shop. I mean, you could probably do a Patreon, but I don't think it would be. You have to restructure it for a Patreon. You probably do like shorter issues or whatever. But that's just that. I think that's what I took away personally from that. And that's what I'm trying to do, is make stuff that's specific to the Kickstarter audience. And again, it doesn't mean that you just give up your artistic integrity. You just think of stuff that would fit for Kickstarter. You know, I don't know. I think people were too in love with their ideas, even myself. I remember I was on a Twitter space one time. It's one of my favorite stories. This is when Twitter spaces were first popping, like way before Elon took over. And it'd be like 20 of us on a Sunday just chilling. And we'd be like, all right, let's do pitching. And then so we would be like, all right, elevator pitch, give me an elevator pitch. And this one dude is like, okay, I'm gonna get, I'm like, what's your elevator pitch, bro? He's like, okay, I'm gonna tell you my elevator pitch. But first, I'm gonna start when I was a child watching TV. And I'm like, oh, fuck. This dude talks long. He doesn't give you opportunity to cut in. And he is talking about, it's a sci-fi thing. He's talking like, essentially, like he's talking about Star Trek, as if you're super familiar. Like, this has been a thing that's been around for 50 plus years.
Yeah.
He's like, the Xingzongs are battling with the Cliffians, but what they don't know is that and it's like, okay, I'm like, hold on, what is this? I set a timer for 5 minutes. The timer went off. I reset it. The timer went off again. And he was still talking. So I'm like,
That is not an elevator pitch.
That's not elevator broke. I don't know. The elevator
stuck.
Cable snapped or something. But I was like, that's somebody who's tooling up their ideas. They're not going to change what they're going to do to Kickstarter. Like, they're going to drop what they want to drop. And I feel like it's a lot of that. And it's like, look, if you want to do it for passion, make it. You made the thing. And maybe you get a return, maybe you don't. But be satisfied with that. But if you want to be able to make more... I remember I was arguing that marketing is a comic making skill. People were like, it's not a marketing, it's not a comic making skill, it's a comic book selling skill. Where it's like, yeah, guess what you have to do to be able to make ROI, to make more comics? Yeah. And you have to sell them. And then this one dude was like, you don't need revenue from comics because jobs exist. I'm like, y'all just like,
that's true, right? That is fully true. No, like you said, true. If you're doing it for a passion, if you just want to make it into, like, make a story, make it in a comic book format, and you want to go do your 9-to-5 job, and you do that, you are winning. Congratulations.
What if you lose your job? Have a great day. What if you lose your job? What if you lose your job? What if you're... But
to those people, that is a separate... Those are separate things. Those are people who do not want to be... Who do not want to do...
I don't even think that's true. I think they don't realize...
So you don't think that people can do a passion just as a side thing besides their job?
No, I do think that. I don't think those people are on Twitter. Because why would you be on Twitter? Why would you be on Twitter if not to promote or, like, what's the word? Network with other creators and stuff like that. Okay. Why are you...
I see what you're saying. But, I mean, people are on Twitter for different reasons.
And then why are you on Kickstarter? People can be on Twitter but come on. And then like, okay, then you're on Kickstarter. So, like, you care a little bit about getting return. Your Kickstarter were to make no money. Like...
People, if they're putting it on Kickstarter, that's different. That's a different
think the people that are doing this, that are truthfully doing it for passion and put it out and they don't give a shit who sees it, it's such an insurmountably small amount of people. I don't even think they're worth bringing, to be frank. Because they're
not going to agree, because Webtoons is an incredibly large platform.
What do you mean? If you put on a Webtoons, though, you're putting it out for the world to see. You're putting it out for the world to see.
But I'm saying, you are not asking for a return on that.
Like, how many Webtoons artists are on Twitter? Like on that thread? No, it's not. It's a different conversation.
But I think there are. Yeah, if you're on Kickstarter, if you're putting your book on Kickstarter, you're looking for a return. You're not, if you're trying to sell your book in any fashion, you can't have the argument of, oh, I'm doing this as a passion. I always have a job or whatever. That's not the same conversation.
This is not one of those individuals, but also like you're depending on your job to continue to make comic books. If you were to lose your job, then you couldn't keep making comic books because you're not getting ROI. I don't even think that's a valid response. Like, jobs exist. Like, okay, like, for sure. Yeah, we haven't had a recent, like, economic, you know, calamity in, like, the three times in the last 20 years, right?
Nah.
And then somebody else is like, oh, you know, I do it in my free time, you know? And I was like, all right, but, and essentially, okay, you do in your free time, but free time is what? Free time is time that you're not having to make money, essentially. But if you were to, your financial status were to didn't change and you didn't have free time, you wouldn't be able to make comics, at which point you would either have to quit making comics or monetize. So it's just, it's,
but there is something all, to, there is something to be said for that, right? There is definitely a pipeline of, I do this as a side thing, as just a passion, I just do this for fun. And you get to a point, it grows organically to something that there is enough support that if you were to monetize, like, I forget what it was, but I backed a book. I didn't even know it was on Webtoons, but I find out after I backed it that this was a Webtoons book. And they had 40 something chapters on Webtoons, and they had just collected it and put it in a trade. And I was like, I collect trades. This looks like an interesting story. Boom, whatever. You know, I saw it on Kickstarter. And I come to find out, oh, this is a Webtoon thing. And who knows how many people have already read it, but like once it was at a point where, you know, they saw enough audience, they saw enough people there, they're like, and people probably were commenting, you know, I'm not really super familiar with Webtoons, but there's a comment section and people are probably like, hey, put this in a book. So they were like, all right, well, let's do a Kickstarter. And they put it together and they caught my attention for that, but they already had their base of the people who were going to fund the book. Like, they had, you know, let's say 200 people or whatever that were reading the comic. You know, once you're at a level, you know, like with you, you're about to have 100 backers, and let's say that fully funds the book, right? If you had just put this book out through Webtoons or through your own website, and the audience grew to a point where 100 people were reading the book every week or month or whatever, however often you put it out, and then after two issues or three issues, they were like, hey, you should print this, I would buy it. And enough people said that, you'd be like, all right, cool. And then you would run a Kickstarter, and then those people would fund the book. You don't even need more audience, but then you could potentially find more audience that didn't know about your site or about the Webtoons. So like, yeah, that exists.
That's so specific. It's too specific. Like, you can't, you can't really bank on that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
No, that's not
one of the exactly. people, that's like almost like the people that don't care about, like, they're doing it purely as a hobby.
That's what I'm saying.
If you're a writer, I find it very hard that you could just, like, you have to pay. I don't think those people really exist like that. But
you're saying, I've written a shit ton of stuff in my time. None of it's monetized. Right.
Have you made a comic book? Like, if you're a writer, you commission somebody to like draw the art and you
I actually
that.
I actually drew my own comic book. I was in an anthology that was done 3-4 years ago. It came, went on Kickstarter, got funded, everything.
Right, but you're not a writer in any sense. You're a writer artist. I'm saying if you're a writer.
No, I'm definitely a writer. It looks like shit. it's a shit drawing.
You, man, you and these damn whataboutisms, bro. You killing me right now, bro. You're not the example of what I'm talking about, because you could draw. I'm talking about if you're purely a writer, then you have, whenever you get something made, if you want to make comic books.
Okay, so you're saying strictly in comic book format.
We're talking about comic books. And one of the people that were like making the argument about like, oh, I do it in my free time, they end up running a Kickstarter, which is like hysterical, because like, okay, well,
that's, you know, you can't, you, that's not doing it in your free time, that's trying to make money off it. There's no way around that, which is fine,
but that, like, that's totally cool. But again, it just goes back to my point about like, okay,
it's all pretense. Yeah,
you like having money. Like, nobody, why is it weird to like want money? Like, why is
that's
it
the
weird
society that we're in. We need money. Like, believe me, yeah. I'd be the first one to sign up for a society that doesn't need money. But like, that's just not where we live.
Like, you need money, and it's like, we, so I don't see anything wrong with like, okay, I got an idea. Like, okay, let me like with Tap or Die, I'll use an example. Like, that was an idea made for Kickstarter, but like, it's not that much different from any of my books. It's like, it's probably a little bit more graphic. There's like a little bit more sex. And like, I had some NSFW covers. I don't think I'd like abandon my creative, you know, like, I feel like that's one of my best books. You don't have to do that, right? Like, but it could have been a zombie wrestling book. You could have done the cheesecake thing. I don't know. You could have done a queer wrestling book. You could have done any of these little demographics that it doesn't have to be a wrestling book. You could have done any. You can lean into any of these pockets. You right. can kind of look and kind of lean into something else and like make alterations. It would be nothing to change it and make it a like. Maybe there's a budding romance between two wrestlers, like they're two male wrestlers, two female right. wrestlers, whatever. Now you have a queer wrestling book. It's like, okay, cool. Like, it's not that hard, you know.
I don't know if you've been on Twitter the last couple of days, but apparently it's not possible to make to do any kind of book with also queer. The whole Alan Scott Green Lantern thing really popped off, and it's like,
I almost have no interest in that.
Bro, it's just so funny. Like, people are so mad about it, but like, nobody was talking about Alan Scott last week. Nobody, not a single person. Nobody. Some dude was like, why don't they just focus on Obsidian and do a book about like how Alan Scott can't understand him because, you know, he's an older generation dude and he's straight and his son is already gay. Like, he's already been written as gay. And I'm like, right, but nobody cares about Obsidian. Like, you. This is the first time anybody's brought up Obsidian like as a original thought. And how long? And you did it as a response to we're making a comic book about Alan Scott being gay in the 40s. Like, nobody cares about fucking Obsidian.
I don't know what Obsidian is.
Exactly.
I get real tired of, like, the discourse is just dog shit. Whenever it's one of these things, and I don't think this is the case of this, but sometimes it's the outrage marketing is, like, becoming very real. Like, Velma, I think, was, like, the best example of that. And it's like, it's just annoying on both sides, because like, I remember the movie that I think that stood out the most in terms of like disingenuous arguments on both sides was like, you know, there was, I guess there might have been a pushback on like Eternals because it had like, you know, it had great representation. But then you watch the movie and it's like the most mediocre movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, this shit is like,
I disagree.
What's great about Eternals? Well, let me make a point. We can circle back. But I feel as if people are like trying to praise that movie to drown out the bad faith on the other side. And then it's oh, I don't see why anybody has a problem with this movie. It's like, come on, bro. Like, you're not arguing for like Goodfellas or Godfather, bro. Like, we're talking about phase four Marvel movie. And you have all this passion for this movie. Come on, bro.
I certainly understand.
And you can
why,
like it. Nope.
Yeah. I don't think there's any problem with liking it. I like the movie. I certainly don't think it was the worst thing out of the MCU. I don't even think it was the worst film out of the MCU. I definitely don't get the like, oh my god, it's fucking horrible. I think you're overdoing it a bit, but I think anybody that's doing like hardcore one side or the other, like, it's not that. It's really not that. If you're saying, oh, it's the worst movie ever or it's the best movie ever, like, it's not. Like, there were so many people that were like, oh, Quantumania is the best MCU movie. I was like, no, it's not. Like, it's not.
You know what? I think there's something to be said, though, for being forgettable. And I would say Eternal is definitely, like, the most forgettable MCU movie. And I think, like, I think...
Thor 2.
Oh, man.
I did like Thor 2, but I like barely remember that movie.
I said I didn't like something, and you were like, no MCU movie was bad. Was that you?
Probably. I don't think there's a single bad MCU movie. I think they're all good to great. You say your tastes are more refined.
No, I think I said I have harsher tastes or something like that than you, and you were like, agree, disagree. Like, that's not really a disagreement if you don't think there's no MCU movies that are bad. And I think I don't know if I think, I don't think any of them are terrible, but I think Thor 2 is like definitely mediocre. I think a movie being
like I think it's good. I think it's a good movie, but also I also don't think that good is like this high praise, right? I don't think, like, I think the, like, to go on the other side of the fence there to DC, I think the first Suicide Squad movie was a bad movie. But I also think Black Adam was the absolute worst movie that I would want out of a superhero movie. I think it was boring. It was clownish. Like, the amount of times I turned around to my wife and I said, goofy. Like, this is just goofy. And I think that's the bottom line. But, like, I would... And it was very much a matter of, like, just barely, I would rather watch the first Suicide Squad movie. Not because it's so great, but, like, it just... It would be something other than this goofy shit. Like...
I think there's all kinds of different ways to rate different things, obviously. Yeah.
Like, a bad movie to me is like Fantastic Four, like the Fantastic Four movie that came out in 2016. That's a terrible
movie. I think that's a horrible movie. I don't know. Bad. I would definitely call like Ant-Man 3. I would call that a bad movie. Eternals, I would definitely call that a bad. I mean, that movie was dark. that movie was like, the plot didn't make sense. Like, they're Eternals, but they kept dying.
That's their whole thing. They die and they get reborn. They always die and get reborn. That's their whole thing.
Did bro that died come back?
In theory, he could. I think the way they resurrect them in the movie is a little different. I think they like rebuild them, like reprogram them. That's why I like.
Oh my god, the Black Knight scene where you have like Jon Snow in the beginning and he's like super heavy into the movie. And you're like, oh, is he going to be like the love interest? So when there's like danger, he'll be the emotional avatar for the audience. No, he just comes back at the very end and it's like a little sword. And
bro, that is like, I couldn't figure out who he was.
And then it's the it's me Blortho scene. Like, that movie is dog shit. Like, that movie is so bad.
I disagree. I will say it had...
That's terrible storytelling. Like, if there was a different movie where that wasn't the language, that you could have an overemphasized part of a movie in the beginning, and then it's completely worthless, and then some random thing happens at the end. Like, that's the epitome of bad storytelling.
But I don't think it was overemphasized. In fact, I thought it was horribly underemphasized because I was like, who's this fucking random guy? And it was like, all right, cool. Like, he's some fucking ex-boyfriend, whatever. I don't give a shit. And it was not until, I think, the end when they were in the park and she left, when she got, like, teleported, and she said Dane, like, for the 14th fucking time, I was like, oh, shit, it's Dane Whitman. Like, and I know that they are a couple. Like, when I started reading Avengers, they were a couple. Like, that is the era I started reading Avengers in.
I think he was overemphasized in the beginning. He was underemphasized in the climax. We're saying the same thing. But, like, if there was another movie, if you were watching, like, a romantic comedy where there was an ex character that was, like, very prevalent in the first act, and then you never saw them again until the end credits, you'd be like, oh, that was a bad storytelling choice. But it's like, the MCU can kind of get away with these like lazy decisions because they've redefined the language of their type of movies.
Yeah, but they don't need to. Everyone doesn't need a strong character arc in their first appearance. Black Widow's arc in Iron Man 2 is not great. It's really not.
But she came back, but she wasn't gone. But I think that's a better example of what to do. Like, she was a character. She was there. You understand, like, okay, she's got some other stuff going on. Even if you didn't recognize her as Black Widow, there would still be entertainment value, and then she was there for the climax. Like, this dude was there heavy in the first act and then never came back until, like, the final.
Right.
And there's the scene where it's like, I'm Thanos' brother. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, where'd you come from? I guess that was a post-credits. That's what I'm saying, bro. Like, that's bad. It's part of the movie. It was a bad scene. Like, and I think, I guess it depends on your tolerance. And I guess that's also part of the disconnect is what is your tolerance for this kind of stuff? Because you can, if you have a deep comic book superhero understanding, like a lot of this stuff, like you said, Dane, like, oh, I know who that, like, let's say you recognize him, that you get a kick out of that. I don't know what the hell a Black Knight is. I don't know what the hell Thanos' brother
You should read their story for sure.
I don't know why Thanos' brother looks like a like just a normal white guy. Like, I don't understand. Like, I thought the Titans looked different. Why does Thanos look like that?
No, that's
besides the point, though. Okay. Explain that in the movie, and that's my point.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so, but I mean, I think that's the point. The point was, this is the last thing you're going to see. This is going to be the, like, wait, they're going to have all these questions. The problem is that they did it then, and now there's going to be however many years before we see him again. Like, are the people who have those questions, who aren't like diehard MCU people, like, are they going to give a shit anymore? Like, the general audience.
I don't think they gave a shit when it came out. Like, I think, like,
I mean the people who did have those questions.
It works best. The MCU movies used to work best as you get a good solid story, you get a good, you know, 90 to 2 hour entertainment, and you're satisfied, and then, oh my God, there's this other thing that's teasing this other thing, but I'm satisfied with this. But I think it's become now is like, this is kind of, I'm only watching for the lore. I'm only watching for, the only appeal is how this fits into the greater universe. And I don't think that was the case until very, very recently. Like, I can watch Thor Love and Thunder. Hell no. I can watch Thor Ragnarok and get a completely satisfying experience. Even if I'd never watched a Thor movie before, they even do a really good job of, I feel like, kind of doing a soft reboot where they have the Loki, like the play scene.
Yeah.
Very subtle kind of, like, so I don't know. It's just a different level of craftsmanship that we're used to. And it just goes back to, like, these movies are not worth having. Like, I've never seen something start a culture war that was good. Like, it's the Ghostbusters 2016 movie. It's She-Hulk. It's I don't know. Maybe it was Velma. I can't really remember. But it's always, like, shit that... She-Hulk was a great show.
She-Hulk was a great show.
You're a liar.
It was a fun show.
You're absolutely.
It was a fun show. It was exactly what it set out to be. It was set out to be a fun show.
Fun and great are two different things. Fun and great are two different things.
But if a show does exactly what it sets out to do, it's a great show.
I don't disagree, but I guess my problem is, and again, we have to, like, what does a great show mean to you? Because
I think a great show or a great movie is a movie that...
Hold on. I would say that it was effective. Like, if you're saying it was trying to be fun and it was accomplishing that, I feel like, okay, that's effective. Like, that's effective storytelling. But, like, when I think of a great show, I think of, like, Game of Thrones. I think of, like, Breaking Bad. I think of, like, you know...
That's funny. You say Game of Thrones. I watched a couple episodes with my wife, and I thought it was a dreadfully boring show.
But you... Okay. But you understand what I mean. I'm talking about, like, a... widely regarded as a great piece of, sure, of television. And so I watched She-Hulk. I didn't watch all of it. I watched the first episode. First off, there's just decisions that they make that you great TV shows don't do. Like, there was the ending where it's cut together crazy, where she goes and it's almost like a post-credit. She goes and, like, beats up the bad guy and, like, super quick edits. So crazy. I mean, the fourth wall breaks, I feel like, only work if you understood that that's what the character did in the comic books. Like, I don't think the fourth wall breaks or the narration, like, you know, the fourth wall breaks worked at all, like, on its own. I was like, what the fuck is this?
I disagree. I think they should have had more of them. Like, I think people after Deadpool fully know fourth wall breaks.
No, people know about fourth wall breaks before, but I don't think the fourth wall break... breaks did anything substantial to set the tone or really tell you anything. And I don't even think the fourth wall breaks in Deadpool are always great. So it's not even like, I think it was executed better there. I mean, even the first scene where she's, like, talking to her business partner, she's like, hey, I'm She-Hulk. It's like, what the fuck is, what am I watching? Like, there was just so much filler.
I will say, I don't like that a lot of people are using this, like, news that Marvel's going to start having pilots and showrunners as, like, the, oh, this is why XYZ was bad. This is why this was bad. Like, they're using it as an excuse for, like, this is why everything I didn't like about the last shows was bad. But I will say She-Hulk's finale suffered because I think there was a lack of overall story vision. But I think, generally speaking, like, if you essentially look at...
That's not a great show to me. Sounds like...
Well, no. Let me explain. I think okay. if you, generally speaking, if you look at each episode as a single, like a single standalone issue that's like in the same series, it is what it is. I think that's exactly what it set out to be. The problem is I think it was a good show. I will take back great. I think it was a good show.
You're not describing a great show. You're saying like, oh, this serialized episode of television works really well individually. Like
that's the thing. I think I don't think they abandoned the like serialized format. I think they never wrote it that way because of this like lack of showrunner. Like there wasn't someone in charge of like, this is the beginning. Like, I don't think they wrote like an outline of this is where it's going to start and this is where it's going to end. I think they wrote episodes, maybe not even in order. And then by the end, they were like, well, how do we finish this? Oh, wouldn't it be funny if, and then they just did all this shit. Like they like, they backloaded all the fourth wall stuff. Like the fourth, they were like, we're gonna do a little fourth wall. Whole half of the episode in the finale is fourth wall break. Like the major revelations and all plot points will be resolved through fourth wall breaks. Because I think that was very much like, we don't know how to finish this because I think they didn't sit up front and say, all right, beginning story, middle story, end story. Like,
I appreciate
I will take back great, but I still think it was a good show. I think it wanted to be a fun show. I think it wanted to incite some reactions, and it did that.
Yeah,
I think it did that on purpose because I mean, there's a whole episode where she reads like the comments, which like are the Twitters. They're the tweets from actual Twitter.
What do you think is a better show? I'm let's rank them, or you can tell me if you think it's better than She-Hulk or worse than She-Hulk.
Okay.
Doom Patrol.
Way better. Infinitely better.
Harley Quinn.
I have not watched it. So you like cut out for a second. The Boys? The Boys I have a lot of problems with. I would rather watch She-Hulk again.
That's not what I said. I said which one is better. In your opinion.
I think that is an ultimate rating for me. If I would rather watch something, it is better by definition. Because if something's better, I would want to watch it again, right?
Okay, but I would rather watch You've Got Mail than 12 Years a Slave, but I would undeniably say that 12 Years a Slave is a better movie than You've Got Mail.
I think the rating for that is different. I think the reasoning for that is different.
Okay. okay, all right.
That's like me saying that I would rather watch, I don't know, the Fantastic Four movies, the first two, more than I would want to watch Schindler's List again. Sure, but Schindler's List is Schindler's List.
You're saying, I think you're speaking to enjoyability. I mean, that kind of speaks to my point that I'm asking for like your idea of something that's objective. You're saying
like objectively better. Okay. Generally speaking, I would say The Boys is better.
Okay, yeah. So that's my problem.
When
you watch these Disney Plus shows in a vacuum, if you were to teleport me from like 10 years old, like I don't have any superhero shows, and you were to show me this, I'd be like, oh yeah, this is really good. But I think the problem is, and this is why I like comparing media. I always hate the argument that you can't compare two things, because how do we understand what greatness is if we don't compare it to other greatness, sure, or even good stuff to determine that, yes, Schindler's List and 12 Years a Slave are great movies. Like, how we do that? And I think that's where it falls short, because we're in an era where television is incredible. And it's like too much good television. Like, you can't watch all the good TV. You couldn't watch every TV show better than She-Hulk, like in a year span, just coming out that, you know, that particular season or whatever. And I feel like the Disney Plus shows, it's like, okay, this isn't trash. Like, you've made something that isn't terrible, but like, why wouldn't I rewatch Fargo or Breaking Bad? Why wouldn't I watch the new Harley Quinn when those things have a direction? Like the thing you said about it didn't have a direction, it didn't have a through line. This is a TV show, you know, and this would be great again when Xena, you know, Warrior Princess was on the air. But I feel like they're always aimless. I never feel like they're trying and really going for, like when you watch something inspired, like when you watch Breaking Bad, when you watch Fargo, when you watch, I will say Harley Quinn, when you watch The Boys, it feels like, okay, these are inspired. They're trying to make sure every celluloid, every pixel of this is super interesting. You don't think so? I think The Boys has so many problems. But that's it. See, we can't do this on time because you be.
But we can because it's everything, right? It's not just like, oh, every pixel looks great. Sure, yeah, it looks visually, it's stunning. It's a fantastically.
No, you misunderstand what I was saying. No, you misunderstand. I'm saying they're trying to make the best show possible. Like the greater The Boys. That's besides the that man. We got it.
They're failing.
One of these days, you got to learn.
They're failing. How can you tell me it's a great show when they... Have you seen all the seasons?
You're not even hearing my argument. My point is that it's an inspired show and that they are trying to make the best show possible. I think everybody involved is trying to make the guest. You can tell from, like, even Game of Thrones. Like, I know you didn't watch it, but, like, the first four seasons, it's like everything is firing all cylinders and they're, like, telling, like, a incredibly cohesive story. They run out of material.
Because they were running out of material.
By the seventh and eighth season, the writers didn't give a shit. They didn't care at all.
Because they had to write themselves.
Everything else looked great. Like the set design, the actors, the score, everything else looked great. So like it's still subjective to say that. And like, yeah, you don't love every decision made in The Boys. I don't love every decision made in The Boys either, but I would never describe it as lazy. Like I would never describe it as
absolutely lazy. Conceptually, okay, it's lazy.
Let's put a pin in that. When I watch She-Hulk, I don't get that feeling. I don't get that feeling of like, okay, they were trying to make the best show possible. I think they were trying to make a fun show and kind of rest on that. Like, oh, it's not super serious. And like, there's a market, there's a need, and there's a time and a place for that. But I don't think that's what was sold for these Disney Plus shows. And I think it's a cop-out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think like... King of Queens is like a fun show, but like nobody would call that great television. Like nobody would go to war on the internet for King of Queens. You know what I'm saying? So like that's
no, but that, okay. So I think that's where we get into the comparing the media versus comparing the audience expectations. If somebody sits down to watch King of the Hill, or like when I sat down to watch Bob Hart's Abishola, like great fucking show. I really think it's a really fucking great show. I think everyone should watch it.
I would say King of Queens, not King of the Hill, because I think King of the Hill.
King of Queens. So like I think when people sit down to watch those shows, they have zero expectations besides the trailer, right? They saw the trailer, they're like, this looks fun. I'll give it a show. I'll give it an episode. I'll give it a couple episodes. Oh, okay, I'm gonna give it a season, etc. When people, especially comic book fans, come into a film or show based on a comic book, they have massive expectations. I think that's the wrong way to go about life, but that's just my opinion. And I can't fucking tell people what to do. People walk in, that's like, well, people went into the first Daredevil movie, right? The movie fucking bombed. People hated that fucking movie. Except I went in expecting jack shit. I walked in and I was like, dude in a red suit, they have succeeded in making a Daredevil movie. Everything else is cake. And I had a blast. The next day, I was like, that movie was fucking terrible. Holy shit. Here's what was stupid. But when I was in the theater expecting nothing, I had a great fucking time. And I still think it's an enjoyable movie. If I'm going to sit there and critique it, if I'm going to dissect what was wrong with it, there's plenty to fucking talk about. But like, I think there's that people go in trying to be critics instead of just trying to watch a fucking movie.
But those same people that watch Harley Quinn, I think people are largely satisfied. Like, I think you're letting the mediocre writing, like, to me, it's hard for me to like decide it. Like your started argument was saying, nah, you started, but part of what you said is like, this doesn't feel like a cohesive season of television. That's the problem. That's a problem right there. That's going to be a problem for a lot of people. Before you talked about expectation, that's a reason. That's what a TV show is. If I pick up a comic book and I'm like, oh, I'm expecting like this to be a sequential bundle of pages, that tell one story, or at least tell part of a story, and then the pages are jumbled up, like, that's not a failure of expectations. That's not having too great of expectations. This is something that's not living up to the medium, essentially. And if this show was on, if this show was like, I don't know, on ABC or something, like if it was Modern Family, like, sure. But this is Disney Plus. Like, this is part of a grander narrative. So, like, why wouldn't you have narrative cohesion? And it sounds like the narrative cohesion would have made the show better. So it's kind of waving off stuff with these kind of grand ideas, like, oh, people's expectations. And then it's like, you're ignoring the fact that this thing, you want to talk about the boys being flawed. Literally, you're saying that this thing works better in the episodes work better individually than this some of its parts, which is like, I would define as a, I'm not gonna say a bad TV show, but that's poor execution.
Absolutely, like I said, there's absolutely something to, so be, there's absolutely something that to be have a conversation about. But like, what I'm saying is, episode one, motherfuckers had that the same argument that they had by the end of the series. No one waited to watch the whole show to have the argument of this is a bad show.
I had no expectations walking in. Like I said, I didn't even know that she did fourth wall breaks. I was like, what the hell is this? And I didn't laugh one time. I thought the monologue, like her monologue in the middle, was like way out of place. And like even the fact. Oh man, I gotta go. Hold on, I gotta switch this.
Gotta go hardwired, man.
Yeah.
Love.
Yep.
Yeah, even the fact that it was like, oh, it's like Ally McBeal. I've watched
that. Sounds so much better, by the way.
Yeah, I've watched Ally McBeal. I've watched Sex and the City. Those episodes are better than She-Hulk.
My wife just watched Sex and the City. That show is fucking awful.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think She-Hulk is great, but fine. I watched way more Ally McBeal. That show was charming. It was fun. It had like, this is like,
I do think, like I said, there is definitely like room for it to be way better. Like, it could have been way better with some earlier planning, and you know, like if it came out a year later and they planned out the series better, it would have been great. Like, it would have been great.
Yeah.
But for what they put out, but that's what I'm saying. For what they put out, that's the thing. The coulda, shoulda, wouldas are great. But what they produced and what they provided, the episodes were fun for the most part. And like, if you haven't seen the whole show, you also can't give me, oh, it was a poorly executed series, because you don't have the full context.
That's, I hate that argument too, because what's the percentage? I have to watch every single, this is again, the only people only make these arguments for the MCU stuff. Like, if I were to tell you,
I would say the same for any show.
If I were to tell you that I watched a movie that was like critically bad, if I said, "Oh, I watched the first act of The Room," that shit was trash. Nobody would then say, "Oh, you have to watch the entire thing before you can make an adequate." Like, that's what a pilot is. That's what its job is. Its job is sell you on the series.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't do that, sure. For I can't argue that, like, okay, I watched the first episode of like The Sopranos and I can call it a bad show. But when your series length is 7 episodes or something like that, you're talking about you've consumed like 15% of the available media. So like, again,
that's fair.
You could make, okay, people make this argument about other things, but it seems like when you start to talk about the MCU is when people bring out the I don't want to say excuses because that's dismissive, but okay, they bring out the context that doesn't get brought up with other stuff. And I don't think it's worth it. Like, I don't think She-Hulk is worth it. I think like, this isn't even something, I'm trying to think of some divisive media, but like, it's, She-Hulk is not worth it. Eternals is not worth it. These are things that like, otherwise, if it weren't for the argument around it, would be forgotten. Like, it would be out of the zeitgeist.
You know what's funny?
If I think it weren't Eternals, for the culture war.
If I think Eternals would be 5 times the movie it is if it wasn't part of the MCU.
Why is that?
I think the things that you've brought up and the things that other people have brought up about the Eternals are heavily stacked because it's part of the MCU, because you have an expectation of what it should be and what it should do in the MCU. So that's why a lot of people give it, like, they overweigh the negatives. Because I think if that movie were just a movie about a group of characters, like if this was like a non-Marvel movie, I think this movie would have been bigger and more well-received. Because you wouldn't have a built-in audience yelling about the diversity. You wouldn't have a built-in audience yelling about any little like visual or any little thing that they could find to nitpick at it because they hate either the diversity or that whatever. Like,
Are you taking out the Black Knight scene in this MCU-less Eternals movie?
So if it wasn't the Black Knight and if it was just the boyfriend, and then they went off on their mission, which he can't be a part of because they're going off across the world traveling through means that he can't follow, and then at the end when they resolve the whole thing and he comes back to say, hey, how you doing, why wouldn't that work?
I think it was still overemphasized even for what you're describing. And I guess you're removing the "it's me, Blarko" scene as well. I think like people only care about
Blarko. What are you talking about?
It was like a joke. It was like a meme that was like, I love sitting through a 2-hour movie in the dark, and then at the very end, some dude walks through like a gateway and's like, "It's me, Blarko."
You would eliminate the post credit scenes. So that wouldn't be part of it. So it would end with, we saved the world, and now they kiss at the end, and that's the end of the movie. They don't get pulled off into the next Marvel adventure.
The problem with that is, though, bro, is that this movie is built so much on the foundation of the MCU that you couldn't make this movie in the vacuum. You would have to change so much. Like, a lot of the plot is like, they don't really introduce the Eternals, but like it's about Titans. They talk about Thanos, like a lot of these.
But none of that drives the plot. So you could eliminate all references to Thanos. You could eliminate all references to the Avengers, and it's the same movie.
Man, I can't with y'all sometimes, bro. Like, no, it's not. But what do you mean? I don't, because like the MCU has established the language, and it's, for instance, you talked about She-Hulk and you said, oh, the fourth wall breaks, people have seen Deadpool, so people are familiar. If you were to remove Deadpool from the zeitgeist, mm-hmm. I think they would naturally have changed their approach to the fourth wall breaks in She-Hulk. Like, there's no way that they just make the same exact TV show. Like, and they changed.
Absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they would be, like you said, on She-Hulk, for sure. On She-Hulk, they rested on we're making a lot of callbacks. That was half the show, I would say, if not more.
Yeah, and then when you look at the Eternals, part of the problem, like, one, the characters can't die. So it's, and when you're dealing with the morals, you're already removing a layer of tension. They're like weird. They're like weird alien god things. Like, there's no human care, which is where I think the boyfriend would have been great. Like, there's no audience insert character, which is like the most basic kind of thing that you start with, is like, hey, who is the audience relate to? Like, the audience isn't going to relate to the weird guy that can, like, what he can teleport. I forgot what they would do, but they all talk funny, they act weird, they're dressed weird. Like, there's nobody to identify.
I will absolutely give you that. I think that they could have connected with more people if they had extended his role throughout. But then you would have had to make him special in some way, because that's what they did in all the Transformers movies, right? Somehow it's Sam is the fucking chosen one. He can do XYZ, and Mark Wahlberg suddenly can fucking, he's got a military experience that was never mentioned. He could fucking fight with alien weapons and shit out of nowhere, even though he was just a dude tinkering in his garage at the beginning of the movie. Like, you would have to escalate him somehow.
To execute it for sure. But I think, like, if you can buy, like, I think what's interesting to me is how much movies hang on how something rocks with, like, how does an audience feel about something? Because if you can empathize with the Eternals, then I can accept that this is a good movie. But I think there are so many hurdles to being able to relate to them. Like I said, they don't die. If they die, they can come back. Apparently, one of them is a kid. It's such weird ass choice. One of them's like perpetually a kid.
It was developed in the 60s by, like,
exactly, that's my, yeah,
by a former military dude.
You're right, it's weird. It's a weird ass story. And then,
yeah, a lot of the shit that he created was weird. For the fourth world,
like,
all the fucking,
I thought
shit
it was gonna
weird.
Be Watchmen. Like, I thought it was gonna be like, oh, we're going to kind of, who's killing the superheroes, we got to go and find out, and it's like, who done it? And it's like, no, it's not. The way they die is kind of confusing. Like, that movie is so bad. But, like, yeah, if you can empathize with those characters, I can see it not being terrible. But I also think, like, okay, well, if you can't empathize with the characters in this movie and there's all this weird shit happening, then you can't say, I don't get, like, a lot of things will be like, I don't ever understand the hate for this movie. Like, yes, you do. You understand it. You just don't. You just wish that.
No, no, I don't understand. Again, I think there's.
What
do
you mean?
I think there's a strong difference between hate.
What?
And criticism. I think you can have criticism for the film. I think you can have criticism for any film, any piece of media. But I'm talking about the hate. I'm talking about hate. I'm talking about the people that were hating it before it came out. Those are the people that are the loudest on the internet. The people who have genuine criticisms about the movie, like yourself. Like, you're not always talking about the fucking Eternals because you bring it up when it's relevant to the conversation. But the people who are hating on Eternals aren't fucking talking about genuine criticisms. They just hating on it.
I think it's, again, I don't think those people are worth addressing. Like, I think, like, when you say, like,
but they're the loudest ones.
If that post were to say, like, I think if you're hating on the Eternals because they had diverse characters or whatever, you're a weirdo. I think that's completely different context. When you say hate can be any, people call me a hater. Like, people, like, you know, I've never engaged in any kind of behavior that you would associate with the type of people that you're describing. This is a great movie. I don't care what anybody says. It's like shit like that. Like, well,
that's too extreme too. That you can't be on that. Like, I could look. Let me rephrase that. You can not care what anyone says. If you think a movie is great, bless you, move on and fucking about your life.
You wouldn't post about it if that was the case. You obviously care a little bit. Like,
right,
you
exactly. Because that's the thing. A lot of people, there's been a chain recently that people were like, I like this movie, I don't care what anyone says. And I'm like, but they're posting, like, very questionable movies, like The Flash. I mean, okay.
Amazing Spider-Man.
But, like, you could say that you don't like, you could say you like the movie and you don't care what anyone thinks, but then you, like you said, you wouldn't be doing that on Twitter.
You, like, wouldn't be posting about it. Yes.
Yeah. People don't voluntarily post about things they like, unless they love it. Unless it is like, this shit was so fucking good. Like, I went out of my way to make a TikTok about Blue Beetle because Blue Beetle was a fantastic fucking movie. Like, I genuinely loved that movie, so I went out of my way to do that. But, like, I don't really, like, I did that for Spider-Verse. I did that for, like, I don't do that for every fucking movie I see, because it's like, if I like it, it's fine. Okay, I liked it. Like, I liked, for the most part, I liked the second Shazam movie, but, like, I didn't post about it because it was fine. Like, it was fine.
Like, I think, though, like, I think just, like, putting final arguments on it, I think, like, this stuff does have legitimate, everything does, but I think some things are particularly, I also hate the idea of, like, everything has flaws, like, obviously, but some things are more flawed than others, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you were to look at Goodfellas, I could like sit here and tell you why. I'm sure you do. I could sit here and tell you, like, oh, I can, this is perfect writing in terms of, like, sequencing, like, okay, this happened, and because of this, that happened. Because of this, that happened. Because of this, that happened. You know what movie doesn't have that? Amazing Spider-Man 2. That movie is like three concurrent subplots that don't ever interact. And I can argue objectively that that is a worse movie. Structurally, it's a worse movie. So it's like, even stuff like that.
Then Goodfellas? Absolutely.
Then Goodfellas, exactly. So it's like, okay, but both of these movies have flaws. Goodfellas isn't perfect, but, like, I can make the argument that one is more heavily flawed in aspect than the other one. Sure. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's like all these waving, it's like this these broad statements that just wave off like legitimate criticism, maybe not intentionally, but like, okay, but now we're not talking about the actual quality of the movie. If we're talking about like, oh, people had too high expectations, guess what? We're not actually talking about what She-Hulk did right or wrong. Now we're talking about what mentality people went into when watching this movie. And I think audiences should have expectations. Disney is the most resources out of any, like, entertainment wise, out of any company. And they sold Disney Plus on, hey, this is going to be the smaller, like, this is going to be the more intimate stories that we maybe don't have time for on the TV screen, but there's going to be like more focused. And it hasn't been that. They've maybe Loki, you could argue Loki. I don't like Loki, but
Captain America, Winter Soldier, WandaVision.
That shit sucked. That's the the Winter Soldier TV show sucked ass. That shit was there.
What?
It's so boring. It's like the most generic. I don't even know how much. WandaVision. Like, WandaVision starts off really smart, and it's like, you could argue it's kind of boring. I enjoyed it, but like, it's like the sitcom thing, and it's got a mystery going. And then by the end of the series, what happens? It's two characters with the exact same power sets fighting each other. It's Vision versus Vision, and then it's Wanda versus Agatha, and they're just throwing CGI at each other. It's like, you did this TV show, and you could have done something. You could have done something really inventive, or you could have done something with a completely different dynamic, and you revert to the most basic thing, the shit you did with Iron Man 1. Like, it's so fucking, it's such a missed opportunity.
Okay, well, as a creator, what would you have done? How would you have ended that show?
I mean, it's hard to say. I think when you look at Doctor Strange 2, I actually think it was a lot better. Like, the way that they handled the magic on magic was, like, a lot more interesting, was more inventive. Like, Wanda was more powerful, and Strange was almost like, when you look at that Strange versus Strange fight, it's like they're using similar powers, but they're using it in inventive ways. So that's what I would have done. I would have focused on the powers, like maybe Agatha could do more.
Have them do things with the magic, not just throw generic magic at each other.
Exactly. It's just, oh, this red CGI is stronger than your purple CGI. And yeah, exactly. And it's like, okay, but you failed in that instance. You've utterly failed, because this is the same thing I could have gotten with any MCU movie. But like, hey, it looks like way worse. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't have a problem people having, like I said, having expectations, because they set the expectation. That's what these things do. They set expectations. Now, I agree with you. You should realign your expectations when you're going to something. Okay, I thought you shouldn't have specific things like, oh, I want this. Even the what happened with Quicksilver, like Quicksilver shows up and then it's just a throwaway gag, and it's like, why did you even put this in here? This did nothing.
I really hope that was a long tail. I really hope they bring him in as Quicksilver, and that was like, I just can't fathom bringing in an actor to reprise a role and to just say it was a throwaway gag. I can't fathom.
Why didn't they get Aaron Taylor Johnson too? I mean, it's weird. It's really,
because he was dead.
So was the other fuck. What?
Because he was dead. He was dead. Dead.
So was Vision. Anyway, we can't.
But he was a robot. You can fix a robot. You can't fix bullet holes.
Yeah, you see this bullshit. But like, I guess that's my point though. Is that like, they're not executing this. They're not executing at a high level. I think that's the main problem. And like, you can like these Disney Plus shows, whatever. I think What If is the only show I think would say delivered on its premise. And I think the unevenness works because it's an anthology. Funny. Yeah, I think, if you were to say about WandaVision, like, oh, these work better as a standalone episode, or like some episodes are hit or miss or whatever. That's what an anthology is. Like, that's par for the course.
Yeah, but then it suddenly turns into a ensemble piece in the last episode. They did like works. A mini... I disagree, yeah. Because I think it created a new... very powerful enemy just sitting in the wings that they're never going to call back to. That, like, that Infinite Ultron is never coming back.
You think fucking Harry Styles is coming back? Is Blorko?
Absolutely, Blorko is coming back, but I don't think, because they've already, I think they did in Loki, they gave themselves away to, I think actually they invalidated that finale entirely. Because what did they say in Loki? Outside of their home dimensions, Infinity Stones don't work. They didn't fight him in his home dimension. Those Infinity Stones came from one place and they worked in another place. They're never going to call back to that. Never.
Wait.
He went to another... Hold on a second.
But didn't they... The Infinity Stones from Endgame were from different worlds. Like, they're from
timelines. Different points in time on the timelines.
All right. Not different realities. I'm fucking sick. I can't deal with this MCU bullshit no more, bro. This shit is disgusting. I'm so sick of this shit. Oh man.
You gotta plug it in, man. You gotta plug it in.
You know what? You're often wrong, but you're wrong with style.
I appreciate that. You know what? I'll take it.
Absolutely.
Wrong with style. I'm gonna put that in my bio.
Hell yeah.
All right, dude. I appreciate you hanging out. Give the people a place to reach out to you, to find all your stuff, social media, website, all that good stuff.
At Stokes the Writer on Twitter, Instagram.com/TheKComic on Instagram. Yeah. Check out Intrusive Thoughts number 2 on Kickstarter.
Intrusive Thoughts number 2. By the time you listen to this, it will already be funded. Are there going to be stretch goals? Is there stretch goals?
I didn't even think about it, bro. Yeah, so many stretch goals. Endless stretch goals.
All right, well, that's me for this one. Thank you guys for watching. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.
Peace.